Good morning and happy Sunday. Welcome to On the Weekend Edition. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and I am feeling great. I hope that you're feeling great, and I am really excited today. I've got some really good stuff today. I'm going to talk about black women as clergy and their progression in the black church, or actually their lack of progression in the black church. And I have a guest today that's going to share for the very first time her experience in trying to break that glass ceiling. And you will not believe the stuff that she's gone through. I don't have all the particulars. We're going to actually find those all out at the same time today. And I'm really excited about hearing her story and her sharing it with us here on 1500 Radio. And in particular with your boy, with me. So stay tuned for that. We're going to also get Petty on the line today. He's going to give us his NFL picks for this Sunday and Monday and Thursday. There's a lot of football going on. And of course, I'm going to do what I do best, and that is start us off with some news from the following week. And it was one crazy ass a week. So let me jump right into it with a story about the Horseshoe Casino downtown. It looks like they have applied for a mobile sports betting app that will provide Marylanders with what they call first-class online sports betting. The Horseshoe Casino Baltimore, owned by Caesars Entertainment, tweeted that news out on Thursday, and they're hoping to be approved. Now, I'm hoping that they're approved, too. They got the application in 2 weeks before the deadline, and Caesars Entertainment, who owns the Horseshoe, could definitely use the boost. Remember, last year and 2019, mostly because of COVID, they ended the season in the red, which is very rare for a casino. Usually, that has to do with management. This time, though, it had to do a lot to do with COVID, and they're still trying to recover. Now remember, the city and the state benefit a great deal from the revenue that they get from the casino. We need our roads fixed. We need air conditioning in our public schools. We need to be able to hire teachers at higher salaries. We need summer jobs and summer youth programs for our youth and our teens who are getting into trouble because they have nothing else to do except squeegee windows in the corners in the summertime. We need to be able to hire policemen at higher salaries. The city and the state benefits greatly from this revenue, and the monies can certainly be put in these areas. So yeah, I'm hoping that this betting app passes and that they get their license for it and that it's up and running in a very short period of time. We need the money. It's really that simple. Also in Baltimore, there was a camp of homeless families living under 83 in Saratoga, and it was called Tent City. The demonstrators interrupted vendors at the Baltimore Farmers Market last Sunday, and the mayor's office said that their Office of Homeless Services will conduct an outreach to see how to move forward with the market coming back today. The city served these people eviction notices to get them to move out, but the homeless families and their advocates say that they aren't going anywhere. Minister Christina Flowers, founder of Real Care Providers and co-founder of the Coalition, says that the mayor and homeless services continues to disrespect the homeless and make empty promises. Now, the group did hold a peaceful protest on Thursday blocking the off-ramp to 83, and a lot of the demonstrators said that they're frustrated with Mayor Scott for not using his resources to help them find a place to stay. The mayor's office has said that they are working to ensure that the space is cleared out today for the farmers market so that the vendors can set up for normal operations today and through the duration of the season till November. They say they will continue to work with those who have concerns about homeless services and will continue to try to support those and help those in need. Now look, the mayor is between a rock and a hard place on this one. On one hand, you have paying vendors who pay months in advance for this space. And on the other hand, you have homeless families who have nowhere to go and are sheltered and protected in the area in which they set up their tents. Listen, it's a tough one. It is a very, very tough one. I'm not exactly sure if compassion trumps the revenue that the city needs. I don't know. And I'm not exactly sure if the mayor could just find another place for these families to set up these tents. I'm not sure about that either. And they speak about the resources that the city has to find them a place to stay. I don't know if they're talking about hotels or if they're talking about temporary shelter homes. I'm not exactly sure what they're referring to. But what I know is that there is not a city in the union that has allowed homeless people to stop what the city considers progress. And if you have paying customers and you have the homeless, typically the paying customers, i.e. in this case, the vendors, are going to win out. So if we really, really care, we need to find a place that can secure these homeless families. They can pitch their tent cities where there is coverage like where they were. And we don't impede on that. We allow them to live peacefully. I don't know how that works. I'm not in city government. I'm not homeless. I can only imagine what that would be like. In fact, if you are in city government and you're listening today, can you please get at me on IG at On with Brian Pettaway? Tell me what the statutes are, the laws are, and I will tell my listeners next week. I would really appreciate it. But yeah, right now the mayor has got something on his hands because this problem with the advocates building, it's not going to go away anytime soon.
No, we're I'm waiting for the collaborative to say, we have the work done.
Now, that was the voice, of course, of Mayor Brandon Scott. And I promise you, I'm not picking on him, but he's also in the news this week because of the Squeegee Kids. And apparently, he still has faith in his collaborative. Now, the collaborative is comprised of nonprofits, the Squeegee Kids themselves, business community, the mayor's administration. They've all come together based on the mayor's orders, and they all get together once a week in an effort to find a solution to the problems of the Squeegee Kids. One of the solutions we know that is off of the table for the mayor is taking these kids off of the corners. We know that that is a solution that he will not do. He's doubled down on it, says it's never going to happen. So when asked how long is, because they've been meeting since July, this collaborative, and they have yet to come up with any solutions that anyone has told anyone about. So when asked how long it was going to take for the collaborative to come up with a solution, the mayor, he said this.
I'm waiting for the collaborative to say, we have the work done. I met with them this week and told them about wanting to get that work to start to wrap that up.
Look, I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea. I applaud Brandon Scott for wanting to stick in here with these kids and not just penalize them with nothing else for them to do. I get it. I understand. But there are three major and glaring problems that I have. One is that by sticking with these kids and absolutely doing nothing, you put the rest of the city at risk. It becomes a safety factor for everyone rolling through these major intersections near the harbor. I know, I've been there. There's an intimidating and bullying style that these Squeegee Kids have adopted to make them more money. That's become a major problem for motorists. I mean, and it's highlighted by a string of violent attacks. Timothy Reynolds was shot and killed in July, and that's one issue. That's the most extreme issue. But there have been many issues of violence with these Squeegee Kids and motorists. Two, the Squeegee Kids themselves are in danger. Two of these Squeegee Kids were shot in May in what police say was a revenge shooting, where the shooter, who was arrested, said that these Squeegee Kids were shot because they stole from his mother. Then you had another Squeegee Kid that was shot in August and died. So it's not safe for anyone right now. And of course, the third problem that I have right now is the BPD's use of cops in overtime to have these policemen sit on the corner watching the Squeegee Kids, but doing absolutely nothing to stop these calls from coming in from motorists who are afraid. They say that there have been 166 squeegee-related calls from September 13th through October 5th, and that number is on top of the 485 calls that have been made since just July 1st. So yeah, the cops are there, but they're not doing anything. It's not solving a problem. In fact, I would say it's emboldening these kids because the kids see that the cops aren't doing anything. They hear the mayor say, we're not going to take these kids off the corners no matter what. And the problem just seems to be getting worse. Moving on to other news in the country, down in Texas, San Antonio police are saying that they fired one of their own. When one of their San Antonio policemen, Officer James Brennan, shot and wounded a young man that was just sitting in his car eating a hamburger. Apparently, Brennan had responded to an unrelated disturbance at the fast food restaurant when he saw Eric Cantu, 17 years old, inside of his car, which had evaded Brennan earlier that day. Brennan, who had been on the force for less than a year, violated his training and police procedures, according to police, when the officer abruptly opened the driver's side door and ordered the driver out of the car before backup police arrived that he had requested. Cantu, in the officer's body camera video, looks toward Brennan while holding a hamburger, then backs the car away, striking the officer with the open door. Brennan then opened fire several times as the door closed, and Cantu drove away. Now, Cantu, who was struck by gunfire, stopped nearby, where he and a passenger who was not injured were found by police. Cantu was hospitalized in stable condition and initially charged with evading police and aggravated assault, but those charges have since been dropped. And a woman whose exploits posing as a German heiress to scam individuals and financial institutions out of hundreds of thousands of dollars and inspired a Netflix series was released from immigration custody on Friday. The 31-year-old had been held by immigration authorities since March of 2021 after she had already served 3 years in prison for larceny and theft. Immigration authorities claim she has overstayed her visa and must be returned to Germany. Prosecutors say that posing as Anna Delvey, Sorokin managed to ingratiate herself with New York's movers and shakers, claiming she had a $67 million fortune overseas. She falsely claimed to be the daughter of a diplomat for an oil baron. Prosecutors allege Sorokin falsified records and lied to banks, luxury hotels, and upper-crust Manhattanites and stole a total of $275,000. Her exploits inspired the Netflix series Inventing Anna. If you haven't watched that series, watch it. You'll be amazed at just how desperate people with money are to stay and be close to people with money. the privilege is unbelievable. This woman didn't really have to prove anything to anyone to get the amount of money that she received in the way of theft. It's just based on the word that she was an heiress. She wore certain clothes, she spoke a certain way, she walked and sat a certain way, and people gave this woman money and places to stay for absolutely nothing up front. It was unbelievable to me. But, I mean, that's the world in which we live. You look a certain way, you speak a certain way, and people will judge you on that, and sometimes it's real, sometimes it's not. All right, so now what I'd like to do is shift gears and get into my topic for today. Not too long ago, I was reading a book, and it was about black men and women in the workplace and how the competition over the last 40 years has really affected and damaged the black household, black marriages, of course. And in that book, of course, they had some statistics that blew me away. One of the statistics that actually floored me was about black clergywomen, black women within the church. It seems, for whatever reason, and apparently there are many that I was not aware of, but it seems that black women in the church really struggle in getting ahead and getting offices of power within the church. Just the ability to lead the church has been a real struggle for black women, and I wanted to know why. So I was introduced to a young lady not too long ago who I'll introduce you to, and she's going to tell her story. But first, I want to give you a couple of statistics that I got to be honest with you, actually floored me. Like I had to double check and recheck to make sure that this was actually right. As I read these statistics last week, it wasn't lost on me the irony of the black church during the civil rights era being the place where blacks felt safe enough to talk about needing and wanting equality. Now, we didn't specify that we wanted equality for just black men or just black women. We wanted equality, and the black church was the one place where we as a race felt safe enough to talk about that. It's where Dr. King talked about it all of the time. It was something that we felt important for us. So the irony is not lost on me that the place we found the safest to talk about equality is where the least amount of gender equality is displayed. According to The Conversation, an African American theological magazine, African American women comprise more than 70%, that's 70% of the active membership of generally any African American congregation one might attend today. According to one Pew study, African American women are among the most religiously committed of the Protestant demographic. 8 in 10 say that religion is very important to them. Yet America's Christian pulpits, especially African American pulpits, remain male-dominated spaces. Still today, eyebrows raise, churches split, and pews empty, and recommendation letters get lost at a woman's mention that God has called her to be a pastor. There are roughly 31,000 pastors in the United States. Of that 31,000, 10.6% are black. Of that 10.6% that are black pastors, less than 3% are women. However, black women make up 16% of the seminary population, and they graduate at a 4% higher rate than black men. So what is happening once they get to the black church? It's very, very odd. Well, we're going to have a very candid discussion with my guest this morning, and we are very, very fortunate to have her here. And perhaps she can shed some light on what's going on that is keeping black women from being in the pulpit and in roles of leadership within the black church. Now, you will notice as we have this discussion that we are not naming the church of which we speak, and that is for two reasons. A, there are people that are still attend this church, and we want to be fair to them. A lot of the people that attend this church now were not attending this church during all of this ridiculousness that happened to Dr. Hairston. So we don't want to point a finger at people who are not responsible for what happened. Okay, that's just fair. Well, and the other, to be honest, I mean, I just got my show. You know what I'm saying? I don't need it yanked from me. I don't want to be yanked, have the show yanked from me. So I'm going to be very careful and draw a line at name of the church. But it is one that is in the DMV and it's pretty popular. And chances are, if we named it, a lot of folks would know exactly what we're referring to. So we're not going to do that. But we are ready to get into this discussion. You ready to do that? All right. So let's have at it. Dr. Hairston, thank you so much for coming on today to the show. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good, Ryan. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Listen, I am so happy that you're willing to come on and tell your story. I know that you're kind of far removed from it now and you're doing great things, but I think it's important that the listeners out here know what's going on in the Black church, in particular, as it pertains to Black women. The church is a business, no doubt. And because it is a business, I believe that equity, as far as gender opportunities, should be the same. Can I agree with that?
I would, but I would say that I would not necessarily say the church is a business, but there is definitely a large segment of the church that is business focused and would be business oriented.
All right.
But not everything.
I'll accept that.
Okay.
But the way that it's run, as far as the business aspect goes, would you kind of say it's run kind of like a corporation is run?
Yeah, same I way? Would.
Okay.
I would.
And so you kind of agree that equity should be a part of it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
No doubt.
All right. Well, clearly there has not been, based on the things that I've said earlier. And I'm trying to get down to exactly why you might think that is. But mostly, I want you to tell us what has happened to you. You ready to tell that story to us?
I am. Oh, I am.
Okay. Now, I read a little bit in your demand letter about what happened to you. Because although the church that we're speaking of claimed no true fault, they did actually agree to a settlement with you. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, I don't know who agrees to pay for something they're not fault of. I never understood how that works. But okay, we'll go with it. Okay.
Well, that makes two of us, but okay. I'm glad they did.
Okay. All right. But we'll go with it.
All right.
But kind of tell us what happened.
Okay. Well, let me start at least by saying that I've been at the church for almost 20 years. I came in as a pastoral intern to finish my degree requirements. I was seeking a Master of Divinity degree at the time. And this particular church is a church that I chose to complete those degree requirements. I went from completing those requirements to actually joining the church. I became a part of the ministerial staff. As time progressed, I was voted in as the assistant pastor. I was not the first female, but I was certainly the youngest female assistant pastor the church had had. It only had one before me. We're talking now about 2003, moving forward to 2008 or so, 2007. Mm-hmm. The senior pastor became ill, and I was asked to take over some of his responsibilities. Some of his responsibilities then moved to all of his responsibilities while he was convalescing and attempting to come back to the church, which he eventually did.
Okay.
He came back for a short period of time before he decided to retire. We're now up to about 2017. So we've gone from me being the assistant pastor to me taking over the pastor's roles and responsibilities, along with still doing everything that I was supposed to be doing as the assistant pastor. So now I'm basically doing the job of two people.
Okay.
That eventually kind of gets recognized around 2016. So I get compensated, like the difference between my pay and his pay.
Okay.
He comes back and does not stay for a long period of time. I'm still carrying out his responsibilities. He's just there. He eventually retires in 2017. The church had several issues going on at that time. It had a daycare that was just sucking up money. It had other issues that needed to be dealt with that could not wait for the church to do a search committee and hire a permanent pastor. So when the church voted me in to be the interim pastor while they looked for a senior pastor, some things happened that don't typically happen in Protestant churches. I can't say all, but for the most part, generally speaking, an interim would not be chosen from within the ranks.
Okay.
That's the first thing. Secondly, if...
Well, why is that, though?
Well, because they want... Most churches that are doing their due diligence want to make sure that, one, if somebody within the ranks wants to apply for the position, that they're free to do that without having to also take care of interim responsibilities so that they don't have a leg up on the next candidate or those that they might be candidating simultaneously for the same position. So in this case, I was voted in as the interim. I had been at the church by this point 16 years or so, maybe 17. Because of the issues that the church was having at the time, not only was I voted in as the interim, but I was voted in as the interim with this being added to the situation or the caveat with it. And that was that I would be voted in as the interim. I would have the full authority of a senior pastor.
Okay.
And that I would be able to apply for the permanent position.
Okay.
So there were some things that were going down. I won't say that everybody was crazy about that. But out of the almost 300 people that showed up to vote, from what I was told, because I was asked to leave the room when the vote took place, about 7 to 10 people objected.
Okay.
The rest were happy with the decision.
Okay.
However, after that vote took place in November of 2017, you know, I began to experience, I can't say that I had not experienced sexism prior to that, because I had. But the heat got turned up to a great degree. Now, I can tell you some of the things that I was hearing from members of the church. Things
okay.
like there is a contingency that does not want you to become the senior pastor because they know that if you do, you're going to clean house. What they meant by that was there were things that were going on with the church financially that I did not agree with. I'm a person of transparency, so I wanted to make sure that the church, the whole church, not just select members, knew everything that was happening with the finances of the church. That did not necessarily set well with some. There were those that really got to the point where they were quite emboldened to say what they wanted to say about a woman being in a senior pastor's position.
Okay.
Personally, I believe that the climate of the country at the time, with Trump being in office, the church was a microcosm of what was happening on the political landscape,
okay.
where people were just feeling like they could say and do anything that they wanted to do. So with that came several things. I began to get hate mail. I got mail from, and of course, it's all anonymous, but I got hate mail. I got mail from people telling me that I was going to go to hell for attempting to lead men because there were men in the church that could do the leading, and there was no reason for me as a female to be in the center at the pulpit preaching and trying to tell a man what to do.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it traditionally a thing where only men are supposed to lead worship? Are supposed to lead a church? Is that a biblical thing? Or is it just something that?
Well, I'm sure that you can find plenty of people that will tell you that it is a biblical thing, because I can cherry pick scripture and pull out examples to show you of men in leadership from Genesis to Revelation.
Okay.
However, knowing that the Bible has been written with a patriarchal slant to it,
right?
There are people that hold to that idea or ideal. I think the other thing that came into play that's not, I don't think it's unusual, particularly when you're dealing with a congregation that has been steeped mm-hmm. in Southern beliefs,
mm-hmm.
where God, the church, and religion are conflated into one thing, one being. And this is what I mean by that. When the church got to the point where they were going to vote on the three candidates, I was one of them, the final candidates for the position, and I was something like 2% beneath what the mark was supposed to be in terms of the percentage that needed to happen in order for me to be voted in. And there were people that were saying, well, if God wanted you to have the position, then you would have it.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that there's not some truth to that, but we also have to take into consideration that people were being allowed to vote that weren't members. People were being allowed to vote that did not meet the criteria that the church itself had set for who was eligible to vote.
Okay.
Folks that were financially responsible for the church, giving to the church, participating in church, those kinds of things. So in the midst of, from 2017 to almost to into 2020, other things were happening, not just the mail that I was receiving, there were people in leadership that were absolutely opposed to me being in place. So things would happen like they would opt to not call me by the title that I was given. So they would not call me Reverend. They would not call me Doctor. They would not call me Reverend Doctor. They would call me by my first name. Now, Brian, I'm not hung up on titles,
right?
But I am hung up on respect. Okay. So if I'm going to give you respect,
you want it back.
I want it back.
Understood.
It got deeper than that. I had a parking space at the church,
right,
with my name on it. Everybody knew what kind of car I drove. And twice during this period, my car was vandalized. It was damaged. One person in leadership stepped up and paid for it, not even knowing how much it was going to cost. And it was over $1,000 the first go round. And it makes you wonder, like, why that happened. So, of course, when I'm trying to look into that situation, I get told, oh, well, the security cameras weren't on your car that day. They weren't pointed towards your car. That I got told, oh, no, they were pointed towards your car, but they weren't functioning that day. And that went on until the 2 week period for the video footage to be available had run out. Now, at the time, I didn't know that the video footage only had a 14 day life cycle.
Right. You said something the other day to me about, and I really paid no attention to the two. I thought they were synonymous in title. But you said there's a difference between being a preacher and a pastor.
Yeah, so.
And people were okay with you being a preacher. In fact, they were more than okay with you being a preacher.
Absolutely.
They loved the fact that you, or how you preached in your style.
No question.
But when it came time to be a pastor is when they had an issue.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
That is absolutely right. And that gets to your issue of equity, and I'm going to throw equality into the mix with that. And we're talking primarily here, we're talking about the black church.
Right.
We love good preaching.
Yes.
And we will forgive a lot of things. We have a hard time forgiving bad preaching. So the preaching part was no issue for me. That was something that I excelled in. That was something that I got a lot of support for. People don't mind you giving them a good word. People don't mind you telling them something wonderful about God to help them get from Sunday to Monday and to make it through the week. It's quite another thing when you are putting yourself in a position to possibly lead them. I had both men and women, Brian, who had no interest in having a female lead them. And some of the worst ones were women.
Why do you think that is?
You know, if that is a very good question. I think that would be a whole nother show about how it is that we treat each other as black women,
mm-hmm.
the things that we will accept, the things that we will permit. But let me just say this as a little caveat to that. Some of the women that came for me, so to speak, did so with a vengeance. I mean, with comments like, I just don't want to see a woman in the pulpit every Sunday.
Wow.
Okay. You know, and that's hard to hear, but, you know, for some people, it's just their reality.
Right.
And
what's interesting about that is men are always told, black men in particular, I hear all the time, is we don't protect our black women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we protect our black women from other black women. Like, I can protect a woman from a man.
Right.
But women have a way of getting into each other that men will never understand.
Absolutely.
And we don't know how to defend against.
Absolutely.
So when you're in the situation like you were in, mm-hmm. within the church, and black women, as you say, were coming for you with mm-hmm. a vengeance, how do the deacons respond to that? How do the senior elders in the church respond to that as men?
Well, here's the thing. When you have female deacons,
oh, okay.
and some of the female deacons are some of the ones coming for you.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But they cut in a different way. So a lot of what I got even prior to this interim pastor period.
Right.
Brian, I would have folks tell me that my dresses were too short in the pulpit. Now, please understand, I wasn't going into the pulpit looking like a hoochie mama by any stretch of the imagination. Okay. But I also wasn't going in with my skirts down to my ankles.
Okay.
And I took it to the senior pastor at the time. He got a good chuckle out of it and said to me, I can tell you something. At the time, I had not been ordained. He said, Minister Hairston, I can tell you it wasn't a male deacon that was saying that about you. So It's the stuff that, you know, you deal with. And, you know, my feeling with that kind of stuff, you know, I can have a bit of a sharp tongue. I grant you that. And I have had men, you know, say the same kinds of things to me. But right. My feeling is this, you know, in many churches, many black churches in particular, the deacons and the trustees sit up front. They sit close to the pulpit. And while I'm not that old, Brian, I would say that, you know, and I told this to the pastor at the time, if my arthritic knees are that much of a turn on, then maybe you got the wrong folks sitting up there as deacons and trustees.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, you know, it's like majoring in the minors.
Right.
And there was a lot of that, that went on. There was a lot of that went on. You know, it's difficult when you are in a situation where where it gets to the point where you don't know who to trust. So you trust no one in the situation other than yourself and God, of course.
The senior pastor at the time, he was kind of a mentor for you or a friend to you or?
Well, he began as a mentor of sorts.
Okay.
He began more so as a fatherly type figure.
Okay.
For me. We got along very well. I think one of the reasons was because he understood out of the passive nature with which he functioned, which was not my MO,
right,
that he now had somebody at the time as his assistant pastor who would handle business in a different way, in ways that he wasn't interested in doing, but he knew that the work needed to get done.
Okay.
So there was an understanding between us. But again, here we go. I will tell you where all that changed and where it got shut down.
Okay.
About 2009, I filed for divorce. All right. And
was your ex-husband a part of that church at the time?
He was to a degree.
Okay.
To a degree.
Okay.
You know, he'd come when I was preaching, that kind of thing, and it would help out, you know, in some of the ministries. But when I told the senior pastor that this is what was happening and that I was the one that was filing for divorce, all bets were off. There were no more conversations that happened during the work day. We're just chewing the fat. It was all about image. So I had a pivotal moment, maybe about 3 or 4 weeks after I gave the pastor the news. I took off my wedding ring, and you would have thought that I had assassinated someone. I got rushed into the office. I got told that you need to put that back on because you don't know.
Are you serious?
Oh, I'm being so serious. I am being so serious. And this is what he said. He said, you know, you just never know what God's going to do. And my response was, you're absolutely right, but I know what I'm going to do.
Right.
And I know that I am not going to put that ring back on, because that to me was hypocrisy at its best. I was not going to do something to appease what he thought needed to be done to make the congregation comfortable.
Right.
And we're really good in the church about living out of boxes, Brian, where, you know, as soon as we dash the doors of a church building, we leave our brains in the glove compartment, we leave our sensibilities in the trunk, and we act as if God has not given us any common sense.
I had that conversation the other day with someone about how we check our common sense at the
door. Oh, wow, yeah.
When we walk. That's pretty funny. So let me ask you another question.
Ask away.
I know you said you got letters, hate mail, right? And your car was vandalized.
Mm-hmm.
Were you afraid? Were you legitimately afraid to come to work?
Oh, let me tell you. Yes, I was.
Did they provide security for you?
No, I provided security for me. This is the thing. So I have the conversation with the trustees that I feel unsafe, because at the time, there were 4 different ways to enter the church during the day.
Mm-hmm.
There was no security there during the day. My office was on a floor where nobody else was. I was secluded. So yeah, I did feel quite unsafe. I brought that to the attention of the trustees and it got pushed aside.
Right.
And then the icing on the cake for me was I got a very cryptic message. Someone messengered me with a very cryptic message I'm trying to remember it verbatim, but to paraphrase, it said something like, people are dying every day. And just in case the next person is you or me, I just want to tell you that I love you.
Wow.
So at that, yeah. So there was a security company that we had used for some dicey funerals a couple of times.
Okay.
And I had one of the brother's numbers in my phone because of that. I called and explained the situation. I actually sent him the message. And he said, oh, that does not sound good to me. And so since the church refused to pay for or provide security for me, I provided it for myself. So for the last year and a half that I was there, I had paid security that I paid for out of my own pocket. And that was another issue that popped up within the congregation. Now, keep in mind, the general population in the church did not know about the vandalism, did not know about the hate mail. I was not
publicizing.
I wasn't publicizing, wasn't broadcast, but leadership knew.
Okay.
And so when I made the decision and I alerted them that I was going to have my own security detail, I was the one that got, no pun intended here, but nailed to the cross for that. Because then the conversation was, from some, how dare she bring guns into the church?
Okay.
Now, you know, you don't know who's carrying what.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So that was something else that I had to contend with. So there were those in leadership again, and some people in the congregation who maybe caught a quick view of whoever was on my security detail for that day of their piece. So that became another layer of this
contempt.
Contempt, you know, if it was a man, she wouldn't be doing this.
Right.
And my thing was, well, if I had some men that would stand up with me and for me in the church, then maybe I wouldn't have to do this. But it was a matter of protecting myself. It got to the point where I couldn't even park on the church parking lot because once the car had been vandalized twice, I began parking in the neighborhood.
It was safer in the neighborhood than on the parking lot of the church.
Yeah, because, you know, every neighborhood, at least in Black neighborhoods that I grew up in, and I don't know about you, you always have folks that have street cred. Where if you're dealing with that person and the neighborhood knows that you're dealing, ain't nobody gonna mess with you.
Baltimore just like you did.
All right, so, well, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, so there was a neighbor across the street from the church,
right?
And I parked my car in her driveway with her permission. Nobody bothered my car over there. So then it got to the point where I don't want to make it sound like there was no one there to support me, because there was.
Right.
But unfortunately, a lot of times in church situations, there is a very large silent majority. So we'd have church meetings where issues would come up. We'd have discussions about what went down with the vote that went awry, things like that, where people would be silent, but then they wanted to come and talk to me on the parking lot and give me their support and give me the high fives and give me the I'm here for you. Well, if you're here for me, how about you open up your mouth while we're
something.
In church and
right.
not come in the dark of night on a church parking lot to right. give me your support, because that's really no support at all.
So are you traumatized by it? Did you have a hard time? Well, you're kind of like a private contractor pastor now. I mean, I know you pastor some places, but are you traumatized?
You
I'm just saying,
yeah,
are you traumatized to the point where you don't want to become or want a pastor at another church full time? Is that how
Well, here's the thing. You know, a short answer to your question is yes, there has been some trauma behind it.
Okay.
But along with the trauma, you know, we have a whole different set of rules. Like we were saying before, when you walk into the doors of the church,
mm-hmm.
and some stuff is just nonsensical to me. I had a male colleague of mine say to me not too long ago, after he was trying to get me to apply for another interim church position, which I was not at all interested in. He said, oh, come on, Lori. You know, we all been hurt by church Negroes. Just get over it. And Brian, I know this is a family oriented hour, so I can't say to you what I wanted to say to my friend
right,
who said
right.
that. But it's like a dismissal of anything that happens to you as a church leader. And I'm not saying things don't happen to male leaders in church. They do.
Right.
But there is we live with dysfunction in the Black church like it's normal.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Yes, we do.
And we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to address it. And then when we do bring it up, then everybody is clutching their pearls like, you know, well, how dare, okay, how can you say this, you know, about the Black? Right. I can say it because I love the Black church, but we got a lot of issues.
Right.
And I'm at a place now where I just, you know, I'm feeling my way back in.
Okay.
I'm feeling my way. You know, I still guest preach. And
I
enjoy
know you
that.
Do. I have a DVD where I saw you doing your thing, and I was blown away, thoroughly impressed. So it's a shame to me because you are so fresh in your thought, and you bring a different perspective to the church, and you're honest and transparent, and your style is, as they used to say, fire and brimstone. So,
Am I really fire and brimstone?
Yeah, you kind of fire and brimstone.
I'm not fire and brimstone.
You do your thing, though. So it's kind of... You grab the attention, you keep the attention, you're very honest, you're very, what's what I'm looking for? You're very relevant, and it's easy to understand what you're saying. And I think that's what we need. I just think it's unfortunate that because you are a woman, that you have a difficult time doing that on a full-time basis as a leader of a church. I don't get that at all.
Well, you know, when I'm... gave my parting words to this particular congregation, one of the things that I said to them, because like I said, many sitting in the pews really didn't know the full scope of the drama and really tragedy that had gone on. They didn't know the level of the dysfunction. But I said to them that I got to a point, and I was really kind of trying to gauge what their questions might be, one of which was, and I posed it to them, did she give up too soon? And what I said to them was no, because there's a difference between giving up and knowing when you have had enough.
Right. That's true.
You know, and I had had enough.
Right.
I was tired of banging my head against a plexiglass ceiling that was not going to break. It was not a giving up. It was, I've had enough. I felt like I had and still do have much to give to this world, whether it's inside the church or outside of the church. And really, was I spending my time in the best possible way trying to get somebody to understand a point of view from within, when maybe the way to do it is to do what we're doing today, and that is to bring attention to it, to be honest about it, and maybe there can be some change that happens as a result of having a conversation.
There are a lot of people I know who were in your corner, who probably wondered where you went, hoped that you would come back, because this is a church in the DMV, and we're not talking about someplace
right.
On the West Coast, we're talking about right here in the DMV, very close to Baltimore. So what do you have for those that are listening? Mm-hmm. What message do you have for them?
Well, it all depends on
which side of the bread they butted on.
Yeah. I'll give you this. Now, you're right in the fact that the church is in the DMV. And I find it very interesting that some of the ones that were so adversarial towards me, I get text messages every day now from some of them, and, you know, wanting prayer, wanting me to know when the loved one is in the hospital. And I'm always going to pray, Brian. I'm a prayer. I will do that anytime anybody asks me to.
Right.
However, and I told this one particular person that I would do that, but the next thing out of my mouth was, I hope that your pastor... is in your corner and ministering to you at this time. So, you know, for those that maybe are regretting my departure, and certainly I get enough emails and text messages and phone calls with people certainly giving me their warm wishes and letting me know that that they miss me, that they wish I was back. And you know that old adage, you never miss your water till the well runs dry. You know, it is what it is.
A lot of parched people.
There's a lot of parched people. And I am finding ways to use my voice in ways, hopefully, that are uplifting and encouraging and inspiring to people. I do not see myself going back into the church on a full-time basis by any stretch of the imagination, but I think for me that's a good thing.
Really?
I do. Okay. I still love preaching, will always love doing that, but unless folks, I think, are really willing to have an open and honest conversation within the church, mm-hmm. and wanting something different and wanting to change, I think the best change that I can effectuate is outside of the church. Still preaching God's word, still being an inspiration, hopefully to some, and still being relevant.
Well, I think you'll always be relevant. I think that's just a way about you. I'm so thankful for you coming on. And I think what we all heard today is very troubling. I find it myself, I find it to be on the disgusting side.
It is.
And I'm very sorry that that happened to you. But I'm so glad that you are doing great things outside of that, and that your belief in God has not been shaken by it. And I hope that in your in the future, in your contractual gigs with the churches, that you'll be paid properly.
Now you got jokes on a Sunday morning. That's hilarious.
That you're paid properly as you're supposed to be.
I hope so too.
And I hope that this, with people listening, will understand the hard time and the things and the struggles of Black women in the church. That it's not an easy thing. And mostly the women that are in the church help elevate your sisters.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And there were those, I will say, Brian, that did do just that, that did it openly, mm-hmm. And behind closed doors. And there were some men that did the same, that they were right there, you know, by my side, but not necessarily as vocal, maybe,
right.
as I would have hoped that they would have been. And that's both men and women, you know, because people struggle with that conflation that I was talking about right. earlier between those three entities of God, the church and religion. People struggle with that.
Right.
And I understand that. And that's why, you know, I don't come down but so hard on them in that kind of way. But, you know, and also, I mean, we really didn't get a chance to talk about this today. But, you know, there are also issues about how much ownership people feel over their religious leaders. And I think that shows up sometimes more so with female leaders than it does with men. Yeah.
Well, that's another show.
That is another show.
So maybe you'll come back and talk to us again.
I would love to.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Hairston. Reverend Dr. Hairston. I'm going to keep calling you Reverend. Reverend Dr. Hairston. I appreciate you coming on and talking today. And of course, now you are an official member of 1500 Radio. Enjoy what's left of your Sunday. And be safe.
I will. But Brian, I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity, because I want your listeners to know that 1500 Radio just got an exclusive, because I have not talked about my story with anybody else.
Awesome.
You are the first.
Well, listen.
And so I want to thank you again for giving me this platform and opportunity.
That is outstanding.
To have my
thank you
say.
So much.
Thank
you so much. All right. Take
All right.
care.
God bless.
Well, you know what time it is. It's that part of the show where I reach out to the Petty, get his NFL picks for the upcoming week. Yeah, he did okay last week. I mean, I think he's jinxing my Ravens, but we're going to talk to the Petty, and we're going to see what he's got for me today.
Brother B, how you doing?
I'm good, Petty. What's going on with you? How was your week?
The week was fantastic. I feel great. And you know, wow, I'm feeling great. But we're not even going to get into that.
No, we're not.
We're going to talk about Thursday night's game. Russell Wilson and the Broncos are trash. The defense looks good, but that offense is trash. And Russell Wilson is not the man who he used to be. Neither is Matt Ryan. But let's move right along. I'll get back to you and what happened last week. Because last week was a good week for me.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, I really did well. I hope the people who were listening did well also.
I mean, I did well. I listened to you on a couple picks.
Well, that's great. That's great.
I didn't listen to you on my Ravens pick, and I never will, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, real quick, that game that's going on probably right now as the Packers are across the pond with the Giants. Mm-hmm. And this is an easy pick. The Giants are a false 3-1 team. Take the pack in that one. Next, move right along. This is a difficult one for me because I'm really not feeling either one of these teams. And this is when the Saints march into Seattle. I'm sorry, Seattle comes to New Orleans to see the Saints. And I'm just not feeling Geno Smith. I don't know what's going on with Jameis Winston. That's a tough pick for me, but I'm going to go with the Saints only because they're playing in the dome, and that noise could be a little deafening for the Seahawks.
All right, I'll take you on that one.
Moving right along, this one, I love this pick. I love this team. They are upcoming, and Doug Peterson has them firing on all cylinders. I'm talking about those Jacksonville Jaguars as they host the Houston Texans. I really want Lovie Smith to be a winner in Houston, but it's not going to happen this week. Take the Jags.
Ooh.
Next, okay, we have what I was going to think. I thought this was going to happen. There has been a quarterback change with Steel City, those Pittsburgh Steelers. Mr. You-Know-What Trubisky was not the man for them. They finally found that out. So the Steelers will be starting Kenny Pickett down in Buffalo. I like what I've seen in him. I think he can move the team and help put some points on the board, but not this week, as those Bills will continue their ride to the top of the AFC.
I hate the Bills.
Well,
I hate the Bills like you used to hate the Patriots, but now I hate the Bills.
Okay. Next up, we have those dirty birds from the ATL, those Falcons traveling to Tampa to meet the Buccaneers. I don't think Tampa's going to take a loss this week. I'm just not sold on Marcus Mariota. And Tom Brady, after last week, is like, okay, we got to get this thing rolling. He's going through some personal issues. I think that's affecting his play, but I think the boys will rally behind him, and Tampa will pull out a victory against the ATL.
All right.
Next up, we have a division, an old division rival game, and we're talking about the Bears going to Minnesota to see the Vikings. I like this young Bears team, but the Vikings find ways to win, especially at home. I'm taking the Vikings over the Bears.
Finally. Well, you believe in Captain Kirk. Okay.
Not really, but I believe in the Vikings beating the Bears in Minnesota.
Okay.
Next, we have the Titans traveling down to Landover, Maryland to visit the Commanders. And I'm sorry, Carson Wentz just, they're going to be calling for Taylor Heineke pretty soon. Carson Wentz is just not the man for that team.
Yeah.
And after the loss that they take from the Titans, most likely you'll see Taylor Heineke.
He should have started the season.
So the Commanders.
Yeah, he should have started the season.
Exactly. Now, here's one that I feel like is going to be my upset special, and that's when those fish swim up to Gotham City to meet those J-E-T-S, Jets. Actually, they'll be playing in Jersey, but it's the New York Jets. The Jets now have Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson doing the gritty all over the place. I'm trying to tell you, I like this Jets team now. Now that Flacco is not powering those Jets. So I'm looking for the Jets to upset the Dolphins.
Now, is it an upset if the Dolphins don't have their starting quarterback, though? I'm not sure that people consider it an upset if Tua's not playing.
Well, actually, the Dolphins are considered a favorite this week, so it would be an upset.
Really?
It's not a big point favorite, but I like this Jets team now that Zach Wilson is the pilot of the J-E-T-S, Jets.
Okay.
Take the Jets over the Dolphins.
All right.
This one was a tough one for me also, but I'm going to tell your listeners to do this, because every time I fool with the Browns, they burn me. I want to pick the Browns over the Chargers, meaning the Chargers will most likely win. So if you've been listening to me over the last several weeks, I picked the Browns and they burned me. So actually, take the Chargers, because I'm picking the Browns.
All right.
And speaking of that team that you've hated, the Patriots, they will be hosting those pesky Lions from Detroit. I like that Lion team. I really do. I don't think they can beat the Patriots in Foxborough, but I think they're going to give them a run.
Okay.
For all those that place wagers, take the over in this game, because it's going to be a whole lot of points scored. When you're playing the Lions, you better score a lot of points, because they can put some points up on the board.
All right.
This one would be a tough pick, but it's an easy pick for me. Take the Niners over the Panthers. That's all I'm going to say.
Whatever.
See, what you don't know, there's a little backstory there that Nick Bosa has a thing for wanting to sack that pastry chef, Baker Mayfield. That goes back from the old Ohio State versus Oklahoma days. That's a personal thing right there.
If there was no personal thing, you'd still pick the 49ers. If there was no personal thing at all, you would still pick the 49ers. You know it and I know
probably.
It. Yeah, see what I'm saying?
But this week, definitely take the Niners.
Okay.
Next, we have those Pigeons going into the desert to meet the Redbirds, those Arizona Cardinals. Battle of the Birds. Now, here's a little something for you. The Eagles have not won in Arizona since 2001. Will they break that curse this week? I believe that they will. I believe they will go 5-0. I've got the Eagles beating the Cardinals. I found out a little something late yesterday, because I was taking the Rams over the Cowboys. And now I'm thinking maybe the Cowboys might pull that out. But L.A., after that embarrassing showing that they did on Monday night, I'm pretty sure they will beat the Cowboys in L.A.
Okay.
And here's the one I've been waiting for. Sunday night on the big stage, your Baltimore Ravens host those Tiger Cats, those Cincinnati Bengals. Will Baltimore take another home loss?
No, absolutely not.
You're saying absolutely not. Well, let's go back into a little history. Brother B, Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase burning those Ravens. Andy Dalton and A.J. Green burning those Ravens in Baltimore. Wow, you know what? I might go back a little further to when Carson Palmer used to do with T.J. Guzmanzada and Chad Ochocinco Johnson burning those Ravens in Baltimore. And you know what? That trend will continue because Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase will burn those Baltimore Ravens.
It's not
again
happening. It is not happening.
Sunday night in
all right,
Baltimore.
Whatever. Okay, what's the next one?
Because I don't. That will be the Chiefs and the Raiders. The Raiders will travel to KC to see the Chiefs. Just take the Chiefs.
Is that a Thursday night game?
That's the Monday night game.
That's the Monday night game. Okay, so that's Sunday night Ravens game and Bengals, and Monday night is Raiders and Chiefs.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, all right.
Now, let me say a little something about your Ravens, real quick. You still believe in them?
Of course I do.
Yeah, well, good luck with that one, partner, because they have some problems. Why didn't your coach kick the field goal? You know why he didn't kick the field goal? He has no faith in that defense. And if your fans have faith in that defense, they better put up a lot of points because they're going to need it. Well, I guess that doesn't work too well for me either. Bottom line is Bengals over the Ravens.
No,
and for next Thursday night, you have the Bears and the Commanders. Take the Bears. So there you have it, Brother B. You know, your fans are going to be angry. I call the Ravens the angry birds. That should be fans angry.
No. Listen. You're jinxing my Raven. I'm not appreciative of it. Yeah. I don't appreciate it at all. So, you know. But I believe that they're definitely going to pull through this. There's no way they're going to lose a three in a row.
Well,
it's not happening.
It seems like they're a good road team, but for some odd reason, M&T Bank Stadium has been the house of horrors for your Ravens. And it is October, isn't it?
It is October.
House of horrors?
It is October.
House of horrors? October? Halloween?
Whatever.
We'll see how this trend plays out, Brother B. Listen, I got to go. Man, keep on doing what you're doing. Love your show.
I appreciate you, brother. Have a great, great Sunday, all right?
You too, brother. Peace.
All right, Petty. Well, there you have it. Those are the picks for the Petty for today and the upcoming week of NFL football. He's going to give my Ravens the blues. He's going to always pump up his 49ers. You know, I love my Ravens. I'm going to always stick with them. I can't stand the 49ers, and I definitely don't like those Buffalo Bills. So we'll see what happens. But you got the picks, and hopefully, you know, he'll put some money in your pockets. And if he doesn't, if he's wrong, hey, we get to call him next week and give him the blues. And if he's right, unfortunately, I got to pat him on the back. But to be very honest, I mean, he actually does a pretty good job. So I'm very appreciative that he's agreed to come on our show and give us these tips. So here we are at the end of another hour. I want to thank the Reverend Dr. Lori Harrison for coming on today and sharing her story. It was very, very, enlightening for me, and I hope it was for everyone else. That kind of stuff, you just don't read about, you know what I mean? It's always done behind closed doors, so I'm very happy that you were able to come on and give your boy an exclusive. I love exclusives. And to be courageous enough to tell this story. I know it's not an easy thing. It was a traumatizing experience. It was absolutely disgusting, and I'm sorry that it happened to you, but I am so happy that you have moved on and you're doing amazing things. And you're right. People don't really appreciate the water until the well runs dry. So again, I've learned, and I hope my listeners have learned some things today from you, and I appreciate you. And once again, I'm going to thank the Petty for coming on. It's always a better week when I have some change in my pocket and my team, the Ravens, win. So in spite of the Petty always choosing the Ravens to lose every week, I still appreciate you coming on, bro. And listen, I really want to thank you, my listeners, because each and every week, you could choose to be somewhere else between 9 and 10, yet you give me that hour of your time, and I really, really appreciate it. I want to send a special shout out to someone who sent me a message on IG, and you can reach me on IG at On With Brian Pettaway, and I hope to hear from you. All the comments and messages and feedback, all they do is help me out. But Sonia Scott Bushrod sent me a message saying, another amazing show. I really loved when you played the church song. She's referring to the Ron DeSantis bit. She said, I was cracking up. I don't think it was petty at all. I don't even like the word. I call it an eye for an eye. I'm also happy that your show is 1 hour. Have an awesome week. That message came from Sonia Scott Bushrod, who is always supportive of us here at 1500 Radio. And I really appreciate you giving me your time and your hour. And I'm so happy that it brought a little chuckle to you and brightened your day. Your message certainly brightened mine, and it brightened my week. And I am so happy that you are a member of 1500 Radio. So listen, anybody else, I really appreciate getting the messages, the feedback, comments. They all help me get better, help help me grow, help the show grow, helps the station grow. Again, you can reach me on IG at On with Brian Pettaway. Believe me when I tell you, I see them all, I read them all, and I will, you know, I'll comment back. So please don't be shy, hit me up. And before I go, like I say every week, the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So get your relaxation in today on Sunday, get up tomorrow, conquer the world, make a difference, and have an amazing week. I'm going to get out of here now and take the energy that I feel from you, and I'm going to have myself an amazing day and an amazing week. Till next Sunday, people. Peace.